You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 10th of February, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I just discovered something, and I need our listeners to know this. There is a job opening at RT for East Africa. And it says that you have to know most of the Eastern African languages, but I've already written them, and I asked them why it doesn't include Ebonics or Jive, and I've yet to receive a response. So the minute I receive a response, I am packing my bags to Nairobi, and I may be off the air for a little while I get settled, but the minute that happens, I'll let you guys know.
Well, good luck with that. They already have BBC Pidgin English, don't they? So maybe RT are following in their footsteps. I do wonder why you yourself are not regularly getting interviewed on RT. Perhaps you might like to write to them and ask, Matt. But anyway, yes, today we are going to be talking some more about the Ukraine-Russia situation, and particularly about President Macron, who has decided to play the peacemaker. French President Emmanuel Macron has claimed a breakthrough in the tense standoff between Russia and Ukraine, taking credit after supposedly obtaining guarantees from his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, that the situation will not escalate further following a crunch summit between the two heads of state. Speaking to journalists in Kiev ahead of talks with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Tuesday, Macron claimed that he has secured what he sees as a pledge from Moscow on the matter. "I obtained that there will be no degradation nor escalation," he said. "My aim was to freeze the game, to prevent an escalation and open up new perspectives. This objective for me is fulfilled." His statement comes shortly after Putin and Macron met in Moscow for head-to-head discussions about the crisis in Ukraine, European security and bilateral issues that lasted nearly 6 hours. So, I mean, basically all Macron is doing is repeating what Putin has been saying for the last year, that they're not going to invade Russia. And now he is saying that, oh, he's managed to get Vladimir Putin to say this. Well, it's no different to what Putin has been saying all this time. And I do have to laugh at the pictures of this. They've got this massive table. It must have been really difficult for each of them to actually hear what the other one was saying, but I guess they had headphones on and translators, so they didn't really actually have to hear what each other's voice was like. Matt, what do you make of this?
Well, after I stopped laughing, I began to take this a bit more. It took a couple hours, but I began to take it a bit more seriously. You know, I'm doing research on the great Louis the Pious, the great medieval Gallic king, and then going from a great man like him to this, it's a culture shock. You know, I went from France to this variation of the Third World, which is, you know, essentially what France is. The serious part of this, though, is that France has a history of removing itself from NATO, has a history of going after NATO. There's no way that the truncated French military has any interest in taking on Luxembourg, let alone Russia, whose military is far superior to anything in the region even combined. Of course, everything is based on these sanctions, which the U.S. is pulling down. The threat is that the sanctions are going to be far worse, and they're going to go after the energy sector. Well, it's all based on the myth that Russia is dependent on oil and gas. That's not true economically. However, Europe is dependent on Russian oil and gas. So let them keep pushing. It's going to be a really cold winter.
Well, it does appear as if Macron is undercutting NATO here. You may be right. I mean, he may get kicked out of NATO for doing this. The French president stressed the importance of dialogue with Russia, insisting that it is the sole way of ensuring security and stability in Europe. Meanwhile, Putin hinted that it was possible to move forward on a number of proposals put forward by Macron that could help to reduce tensions around Ukraine. However, responding later the same day, Kremlin press secretary Dmitry Peskov denied that a deal of any kind had been formalized at the summit. This is simply not possible. France is a member of NATO, but it is not the leader there. The leadership belongs to a completely different country in the bloc. So what kind of deals can we talk about here? He said. And again, I'll just point out, I mean, Putin has just reiterated the exactly same thing that he's been saying for the last year, that no, they are not about to invade Ukraine. And Macron has come out and said, oh, I've managed to get Putin to say that he's not going to invade Ukraine. You know, there's absolutely nothing new here. And Dmitry Peskov is right to point out that Macron is not the leader of NATO anyway. So what kind of a deal does he think he's doing there? What kind of deal do you think Macron was trying to do there, Matt?
Well, I think the bulk of the deal is not going to be made known to the public, because the public, to the extent they understand anything at all, is simply based on the mythology that Russia is a third world, that Russia requires American trade to function, that the country is like, I think it was McCain who said it's a gas station with an army, everything else. These are the myths. You know, you've got to remember that Western policymakers, no different than journalists or academics, have created Russia. It's not the Russia that exists. It's a Russia that they've created. And there's actually a you know, so-called social constructionism theory, which is a foreign policy idea that, you know, I studied in grad school. It's not so much the objective reality. It's the reality that the elite have constructed about a country or about a bloc. And that's what you have here. You can't talk about the objective reality when you're dealing with this kind of foreign policy. You have to deal with the reality that they've either projected or created. Then you can start making sense out of these articles.
Well, it's a completely private meeting as well. Nobody knows what went on. They were talking in secret for 6 hours, basically. The two leaders previously held high-stakes talks by telephone in late January and discussed Moscow's requests from the US and NATO. According to a Kremlin readout, American and NATO replies did not take into consideration Russia's fundamental concerns, such as the prevention of NATO enlargement, the refusal to deploy weapon systems near Russia's borders, and also to return the military potential and infrastructure of the bloc to the positions of 1997 in Europe when the Russia-NATO Founding Act was signed. And I think this is the first time I've heard of this, a Russia-NATO Founding Act. Clearly, it wasn't a founding act for NATO. That has existed for much longer. So what is this Russia-NATO Founding Act, Matt? I've never heard of this before. Do you know much about it?
Well, yeah, this was a long time ago. This is the pre-Putin era. I've been reading about it, read about this at the time. I remember these articles. I remember talking about it, and I was still in grad school in Nebraska. I was talking about this with my professors. And back then, everyone thought that Russia was coming around because, you know, Yeltsin was a drunk. Western, especially Judaic elites, were having a field day over there. They were reconstructing this country. And, of course, it had to do with the idea that NATO had no reason to expand, so it was not going to expand. And Russia, you know, but even there, it was only on the – it was implicit, but it was only on the grounds that Russia, you know, remained in a third world state. And so long as Russia remains a liberal entity, which is the same thing, by the way, so long as it remains a liberal entity, or at least functioning as a third world state, which is the same thing as saying it's in accordance with Western foreign policy interests, NATO now has no reason to expand. That's really what this is when you get right down to it. It's nonsense and mythology based on a foundation of a false construction of what Russia is. I'm telling you, you mentioned how, you know, RT doesn't contact me. No one contacts me really except our people. And I'm telling you why. And it's because these people they rely on for information are anything but experts in the field. These are the same people who have invented what Russia is. They have minimal knowledge of its history or foreign policy goal. The only thing that Russia is asking demanding is that NATO not take over more of Eastern Europe. It's bad enough that you have Greece and Turkey and Bulgaria and Hungary, not to mention Poland. That's bad enough. That's already against the agreement. But now bringing in a country, which, by the way, is the same size as France, that has no desire to be a part of NATO, because it would be massively expensive, let alone the EU. That's the only concern that Russia has, because if Ukraine goes into NATO, that will mean more or less a total Western invasion of the country, which then will be even more reconstructed according to American lines than it is now, which means you're talking about pure fourth world status. You're talking about a totally liberal entity. The church will be banned. Homosexuals will be – that's already a demand that homosexuals be allowed, you know, easy divorce laws, on and on and on. They have to have a, you know, a female president or all the rest of it, you know, a female foreign policy leader like you have in Northern Europe – I'm sorry, defense leader. The deconstruction of the military and then the reconstruction based purely on American models. And I think you probably have already figured out that American models means – financed and fueled by American defense industries and American energy industry. That's really what this all comes down to. Everything like this, all these nonsensical foreign policy demands, liberal demands, they have to do with who's going to reconstruct the country. Is it going to be Russia and China like they did in Crimea or Iran, or is it going to be American capitalists? That's the concern. That's the only issue here.
Well, earlier in January, Macron began his country's presidency of the EU by calling for a new European order, free of threats, coercion, and spheres of influence. This was widely interpreted as a move that Paris wants to play a more active role in discussions on European security, rather than letting Washington lead the way. Both for us and for Russia, and for the sake of the security of our continent, which is indivisible, we need this dialogue, the French president said, adding that it should be a frank and demanding dialogue in the face of destabilization, interference, and manipulation. And I have to stop there and say, well, it's America that appears to be trying to destabilize, interfere, and manipulate Russia. I mean, you may say, well, what about this manipulation? But that's what all the social media companies do in Russia, Twitter and Facebook and encouraging Navalny and encouraging riots. It's America that does all of that. But obviously, Macron here is implying that Russia is guilty of this. In December, Russia had prepared two draft proposals, one addressed to Washington and the other to NATO. One article in the documents requests that Kiev be barred from NATO membership and that the bloc should refrain from military activity on the territory of the former Warsaw Pact states that were admitted after 1997. Following the fall of the Soviet Union. However, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg has refused to compromise on issues the bloc deems to be its core values to meet Russia's demands. He also said that Moscow has no veto on Ukraine's efforts to join the ranks and that it will not accept a two-tier membership system that prevents it from deploying soldiers in certain states. But this Russia-NATO founding act that was referred to earlier, I mean, this states that NATO is not going to expand. It also states that NATO is not going to increase the security of one country at the expense of another country. And clearly, if they increase the security of Ukraine, it's going to be at the expense of Russia. So NATO is already going against the agreements that it has said. And a simple solution to this would be to say, okay, yeah, Ukraine can join NATO, but we're not actually going to put any NATO weapons in Ukraine because it's too close to Russia and will destabilize Europe. I mean, that would be a simple solution. But this Stoltenberg is basically saying, well, no, that's a two-tier membership system. We cannot have that. So what do you make of this, Matt?
It's something that I started laughing at because I know how to decode all the language. I know what European values are. We are, aren't you, the nationalist movement in the UK and America, we're the only people who seriously know what the phrase European values are. When you see Paris burning because of the third world immigrants, those are European or Western values. It has nothing to do with people like Louis the Pious or the great Otto III of the Holy Roman Empire. It has nothing to do with that. That's not a part of Europe, nor do any of these people know who these guys are. No, this is a way, as I said before, to reconstruct Eastern Europe via a struggling, financially struggling Western system, the U.S. and the U.K., who are failing and disappearing, not only in terms of population, but there's no money. Where in heaven's name is this money going to come from to reconstruct these militaries? Because, you know, Hungary and Bulgaria and Romania, they're still using, as I said, I think last week, they're still using Soviet weaponry from the 1970s. To be a full part of NATO, they have to get rid of all that and then bring in, thanks to Boeing and General Dynamics and the rest of it, Western, not only military equipment, but ideology, political command structure, even the uniform has to be completely remade by these same companies. So that's what we're talking about here. And I don't know. There's a few people out there saying that Russia should simply cut off the gas supplies and see what happens and watch Central Europe freeze to death, because there's no other way for them to get energy. And Russia has been delivering this energy and heating supplies at below market cost for the sake of assisting a financially struggling Europe to keep itself, not to keep itself warm, but to fuel what's left of its industry. So this is no laughing matter. If the foreign policy establishment has its way in Russia, that's what they're going to do. Putin, however, is more of a diplomat.
Well, what I want to see is them building a military base in Mexico. I think that would be a better solution than switching the gas off. Just play NATO at the same game. French President Emmanuel Macron is said to have put forward under-the-table concessions on high-stakes European security issues, including a proposition to make Ukraine a neutral state to his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin, as they held crunch talks in Moscow, British media has claimed. In a report published on Wednesday, the Daily Mail said a senior government source had disclosed that the French leader failed to consult with any of his partners about the private peace offerings ahead of the closed-door summit. Interlocutors claim that his failure to brief Paris's allies could endanger any prospect of establishing a meaningful agreement between Moscow and the West. According to the outlet, one of Macron's propositions suggested Kiev adopt a position of neutrality, which would effectively bar the former Soviet Republic from joining NATO's ranks. "He is doing his own thing. We don't know what's happening," a source told the Daily Mail, adding that time will tell how his alleged suggestions unfold. "He's gone beyond the NATO position, but it is interesting." And this could be a semi-official leak, I think, just trying to sort of get out the information of what Macron is actually doing there. But would Ukraine want to be a neutral state? Is it up to Macron to actually offer that to Russia? Do you think Ukraine would accept being a neutral state, Matt?
From what I could see in the Russian and Ukrainian language – well, I'm sorry, only the Russian, because the Ukrainian language is controlled by the West. But from what I can see from the Russian language press in Ukraine and elsewhere, to the extent that Russian language press exists in Ukraine, there has always been and will always be very strong pro-Russian interest. Now, unfortunately, a lot of that has been kicked out of Ukraine, and the only thing that we can possibly get are these, you know, Western finance, Washington Post finance, the media establishment. But their foreign policy elites, to the extent they haven't been killed or thrown out of the country, strongly says that Russia and China are only future. How in heaven's name can we have a future based on a Western European, my last several Orthodox nationalists ago, I talked about the collapse of Western European economic fortune. They have nothing to offer, either militarily or any other way. Every Ukrainian soldier is looking at Afghanistan and Somalia and saying they can't help us, as they hold on to, you know, Soviet-made AKs from the 40s. They can't help us. Russia is still offering gas at below market prices to assist us, because they're well aware that most of Ukraine is either neutral or pro-Russian. You have a handful of these Union Catholics in the West who, strangely, in the name of national sovereignty, can't wait to destroy that sovereignty by being a part of NATO for only one reason, and that's just to irritate Russia. But I think they're a tiny handful. I think they live in like one block or two blocks of Lvov, and that's about it. Otherwise, you have a strong pro-Russian, if not out of necessity more than anything else, but still, you have a strong interest. I've been talking about this for years, and the fact that Macron didn't say anything to his NATO allies. What do you think that is? Because they would have taken out the spark plugs out of his car to keep him from going and having this meeting. They would have shot the guy and blamed Russian agents to keep him away from this. He, of course, he couldn't tell them anything. He had to secretly go there, and now they're panicking because France, and I'm telling you now, Germany to a great extent, is not going to be a part of this suicide mission.
Well, that's really what this is indicating, isn't it? Is that France is not happy with what NATO is doing. The Daily Mail report comes shortly after Macron claimed that he had managed to secure a guarantee from Putin that Russia would not seek to escalate tensions on the Ukrainian border further. Western leaders have been repeatedly sounding the alarm for months that they fear Moscow is amassing its troops at the demarcation line as a precursor to an invasion. But the Kremlin has consistently rejected accusations of plans for attacking Ukraine and has looked to gain security guarantees that would rule out NATO's expansion closer to Russia's borders. Last week, documents leaked to Spanish newspaper El País purported to show that Washington had formally rejected any such agreement, but had proposed other steps designed to increase military transparency between the two sides. Do you have any idea what these other steps that they may have offered were, Matt?
No, because they largely don't exist. Spain is highly dependent on EU subsidies, but they also are smart enough to realize that these subsidies, I mean, even Spain is under attack from the third world. These people, you know, publicly they'll talk about, you know, how important it is to have European values and to be invaded by the third world. But they also know that this is a suicide mission. They know that having anything to do with Western, the European values, either militarily or ideologically, means destruction of their country, the destruction of their economies, and revolt by their own people. They know this. So if the West pushes and pushes and pushes against Russia, they're going to lose allies very quickly. Germany's going to see Russian gas, which they're dependent on not only Russian gas, but their own investments in Russia shut down. You're going to see the total falling away of Central Europe from the NATO or the EC guidelines. You're going to see a very talented and motivated and patriotic Russian military, just completely. I've read Russian military blogs in the original. I'm telling you, they don't fear the West. I know quite a bit about the Western military. There's no reason to fear them because there's no patriotic sentiment. There's nothing holding them together except paying for college and getting women. That's really what it comes down to. I've heard him say this. This is nothing new here. So there are no additional agreements. Russia is doing absolutely nothing to irritate the situation. They have one demand, and that is you can't invade Ukraine. The only people threatening to invade Ukraine is NATO. And they're well aware of that, of course. And idiots like Stoltenberg are also realizing that without the U.S., they know that their subsidies from coming to places like Boeing and General Dynamics are going to stop. This is purely based on private capital and the demands they're making on the U.S. government that then, of course, makes its demands on NATO in the European Union. This is what's irritating the French.
Stoltenberg is such a clown. You just have to say that. Well, let's summarize what's going on here then. There were three key points in the security proposals Moscow made public in December. No further NATO expansion, no deployment of strike systems along Russian borders, and a pullback of current NATO deployments to the 1997 lines. The NATO and US responses sent over last week, with a request to be kept private, did not address these points at all. No, yes, or no, as if they were never asked, Putin told reporters. We only saw political cliches and proposals on various secondary issues. And they're basically saying that this is all just Putin wanting to expand his empire, that they're not really treating it as a serious issue that Russia actually has, having NATO's weapons pointed at Moscow, just 400 miles from Moscow. I mean, that's the point of this. They're not giving Russia any actual credit for actually having sensible, logical reasons for not wanting that to happen. I mean, what do you make of Putin's response here, Matt?
Again, there are two levels of these discussions. There's the nonsense that Western academics, Western journalists, and educated Western populations are seeing and pretending is reality. Then there is the actual economic reality. There are two completely different things. This is why someone reading a newspaper has no clue of what's going on. Only those who know the language and really focus on the history and the truth of the matter have any clue of what's happening here. And, you know, when you have saturation media coverage saying that Russia can't wait to invade, I don't see what they're going to gain from this. Although, to a great extent, Russia has reason to invade because how Russian language speakers are being absolutely tormented, in many cases killed, in the Western colonial system of but they're not going to do it, obviously. Why would they do exactly what the West is claiming they're going to do? Give Western Europe the impetus it needs to mobilize its military, mobilize its population. Why would they do any of this? It's like we talked about with the nuclear poisoning of dissidents and all this nonsense. Why in heaven's name would they do exactly what the West wants? But when you have a population that just doesn't know anything, this is why Johnson's Law is so damn important. You can't know anything without it. This is why Johnson's Law is so important, because, you know, this is absurd. Who benefits from any of it? Russia has been ringed and surrounded by military bases from the West and elsewhere for several decades. We have been talking about it on this show until I'm blue in the face. But, you know, your average professor at Harvard has no clue about this. And he will, you know, tell you that Putin is a nationalist, conservative Christian, and we can't have this. That's all they know. And that's about the best you're going to get from academics that make six figures. You think I'm a little bitter? I think you're right.
Well, you know, the mistreatment of the ethnic Russians, it reminds me of the Polish mistreatment of the ethnic Germans in Danzig, which was a deliberate ploy to provoke Hitler into invading Poland. And it seems we have the same thing here. We have this mistreatment of ethnic Russians and a deliberate ploy to get Putin to go in there to rescue them. And thankfully, he is he's staying patient and refusing to go along with the goading. Well, the French president said that dialogue with Russia is the sole way of ensuring security and stability in Europe. If the existing mechanisms and treaties are insufficient to resolve the security situation, he suggested that new ones should be devised and put in place. Macron specifically noted that France and Russia did not have the same understanding of the meaning of documents such as the 1975 Helsinki Final Act, which established what would become the Organisation for Security and Cooperation in Europe, OSCE, especially when it came to the issues of human rights and the territorial integrity of states. I mean, maybe I'm getting this mixed up. I thought OSCE was the one that went into Kazakhstan to stabilize the situation there. I thought that was the Russian equivalent of NATO. Am I wrong there? What is this Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, Matt?
Well, this is really, you know, the dominant European, Western European. This is the capitalist dominant organization. You read foreign policy and that acronym comes up all the time. But this is also at least partly sponsoring the Munich Security Conference. And as you might know, for the first time since the late 90s, Russia is refusing to attend. And again, remember, the Russian, you know, people like Sergei Lavrov and his lieutenants are the ones who speak freely. Russia, Putin is a diplomat. The foreign policy establishment, less so. And Lavrov says, "We regret to say that in recent years, this OSCE conference has been increasingly transformed into such a transatlantic forum, losing its inclusiveness and objectivity. Interest in Moscow for this event has dropped noticeably." And that is, of course, a spokesman for that very same Russian foreign policy establishment. You notice this is the same foreign policy establishment that condemned the persecution of the January 6th people. This is the same foreign policy establishment that's condemned the liberal capitalist ideology, the destruction of right-wing organizations, and not just in the U.S. So Putin may not say this. He believes it because he puts his foreign policy people in a position that they will say what the West has become. Lavrov is one of our people. I'm telling you that right now.
Oh, I've always liked Sergei Lavrov. I mean, he's even spoken up about the anti-white attitude in Hollywood movies. Well, the Russian president said it was possible to move forwards on a number of proposals presented by his French colleague that might lead to the de-escalation of the situation in Ukraine. neither Putin nor Macron revealed any details as to what these might consist of, with Putin saying he would discuss the matter with Macron further after the French president has had a chance to meet with the president of Ukraine on Tuesday. So the plot thickens. Macron is now off to speak to Volodymyr Zelensky. So he's trying to be a bit of a go-between between Putin and Zelensky, I think. What do you think will be the upshot of his meeting with Zelensky on Tuesday, Matt?
I think NATO, to a great extent, remember, there's two levels. There's the stuff that gets in the newspapers and academic journals, and then there's reality. And everyone knows, except the American academics and journalists, know what the objective reality is. Macron is aware that the Western establishment is terrified, that the Western establishment is in serious trouble financially and population and everything else. He's aware that the military cannot function. I did a whole show on the destruction of the American Navy. They're crashing into each other. They know they can't function. They know that Russia, with a couple of submarines, will destroy the aircraft carriers that are brought in simply as a show of force. Don't forget, there's a whole set of things that are designed to impress the ignorant and the reality that only a handful of people, elites that I are in the know about. And those are two different things. So really, who cares what the ignorant thing? They go along with whatever they're told. The reality is what's going to win. And that means that Putin is going to win, and then they'll even once the West backs down, Putin will end up being the hero because he's going to drop oil and gas prices even further and assist Western Europe and Central Europe to not freeze this year, let alone Ukraine. And he's going to make sure that the Ukrainians know that he is the reason that they're not freezing. But if the West had its way, they will literally be freezing in their apartments.
So Macron is probably going to be talking some sense into Zelensky. Putin told reporters he had briefed Macron on Ukraine's refusal to implement the Minsk agreements, even after Kiev made commitments to do so in recent weeks at meetings in Paris and Berlin. Instead of taking steps to offer autonomy to the breakaway regions of Donetsk and Lugansk, Ukraine has chosen to persecute Russian speakers within its borders instead, the Russian president pointed out. As for the Minsk agreements, whether they are still viable or have any sort of perspective, I feel like there is simply no alternative to them, Putin told reporters. And I mean, I do have to point out that it's hard to imagine that Ukraine will actually give up Donetsk and Lugansk. And yet, apparently, they did agree to these agreements. So why are they not abiding by these agreements, Matt?
Well, those were short term agreements designed to placate, especially those in Slavic speaking countries. It's not taken. So remember, there is no Ukrainian establishment. It's America. Ukraine is controlled by American capitalists and banks, and not to mention Brussels. Ukraine hasn't been an independent country since the Hetmanate in 1918 under Skoropadze. I've done quite a bit of research. That was about the last time Ukraine had any remote level of independence. And I keep saying this, and I'll keep saying this over and over again, that the economic potential, the ideological, the religious potential that Ukraine, with a population the size of France, could offer the world is being repressed and violated by these very same elites. And it is genocide because of the population decrease, the brain drain, and it is a incredible level of oppression and violence. And not to mention, you're correct to bring it. It's also occurred to me that the Polish oppression, and I had a military government in the 1939, they are repressing German speakers in Silesia and elsewhere. And this is what prompted the perfectly legitimate German invasion. Russia has – they won't do it, but they have every reason to at least take over those areas where repression against Russian speakers is the norm, which is most of the eastern part of the country. No one really cares about the West because it's not really industrialized. But even there, you have a strong pro-Russian stance among the general population. The West simply can't win this. Donetsk and Lugansk, that's the only places. And Odessa, this is the only place they actually had any kind of industry. This is why, and you know, every man there has been drafted into the military at some point. They know how to handle a gun. And when West ordered the Ukrainian army to go in there, they were destroyed, they were butchered, and mostly most of them deserted. So this is what the West has to deal with. Americans don't know this, but Western elites like Macron and the new elite in Germany are well aware of this.
Well, finally, let's take a look at Putin's long view. I mean, he's obviously looking further ahead than the West and Europe here when he says this. Bringing up NATO's argument that any country is free to join the alliance if it so wishes, Putin says that Ukraine doing so would quickly result in a nuclear war with Russia. Kiev has designated Moscow as an adversary and insists that Crimea belongs to Ukraine, something that NATO countries agree with, Putin said. The peninsula voted overwhelmingly to rejoin Russia after the February 2014 coup in Kiev, backed by the US at the expense of a power-sharing deal that had been mediated by France and Germany. Russia officially welcomed it back a month later, something it did not do with the two Donbass regions, which followed suit and also held referendums. Ukraine's membership of NATO would trigger the alliance's Article 5 mutual defence clause the moment Kiev decided to reintegrate Crimea by force, basically resulting in war with Russia, a leading nuclear power. There would be no victors, Putin told reporters. Macron does not desire such an outcome, and neither do I. And I think that's the first time that he's actually brought up this nuclear aspect. But I mean, there would be war, basically, if this happened. And that's what Russia are trying to avoid. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this?
I want to leave you with the simple fact that I've made 50 times before, that no one in among the elites in any power establishment in the West have noticed. And Biden was actually a part of this one time when he was coherent, that when the Soviet Union would actually do these kind of things that Russia is being accused of, not only was there no attack from the West, it was often praised by different aspects of the foreign policy establishment with the exact same kind of economic situation. So the difference here can only be ideological. When Russia is a more or less a Christian nationalist or at least a Eurasianist state, they come under attack for the same policies that they were praised for, or at least ignored when it was a leftist communist state. That's the only difference here, and that's the key fundament that everyone has to start from when trying to analyze these situations.
It all boils down to traditionalism and progressivism, basically, really. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.